You're listening to Power Athlete Radio, a podcast dedicated to empowering your performance every damn day. Join former NFL pro and Power Athlete founder John Wellborn as he dissects the greatest minds in strength, conditioning, and more. So whether your goal is to be the hammer, destroy mediocrity, or simply move the dirt, you've come to the right place. Now with the warm-up done, let the gains begin.
Hey, Power Athlete Nation, we have an old friend on the podcast today, Mr. Matt Reynolds. I met Matt years ago when he stopped by Power Athlete in Costa Mesa to bang weights and eat pancakes, two things near and dear to my heart. 25 years of experience competing at a high level in strength sports and coaching barbell-based strength conditioning. After earning his master's degree in education, Matt transitioned from the classroom to the world of business ownership in 2008 when he founded Strong Gym. That grew into one of the most successful gyms in America and has led to his transition to online coaching. He's realizing his goal of bringing a boutique training experience to the masses. In this episode, we dive into where he started and where he's going, and it looks big. Buckle up.
How's stuff been going, man? How's business and life?
Last time when you were there, we were in California. We ended up necessitating a move in late 2016-17 on the heels of a few things. One of them was some military contracting we were doing, but also just needing to leave California.
You're in Austin now?
Yeah. So we came out to Austin. At the time, we thought we were moving to the country. That all changed when COVID hit and Joe Rogan moved to Austin. And then all of a sudden...
Now there's no more country left out in Austin.
They basically built 7,000 homes around us, the city just kind of grew to us. So now we live in like the Newport Beach of Texas. I mean, there's like Lamborghini SUVs and Bentleys and everything around.
Well, you probably don't care that much, but I bet it helped the property value at least.
Yeah, it put us in a weird position because we were like on like a little two-lane road, and now it's four lanes, and there's stoplights and these like massive developments. And so I feel the daily buzz of developers circling. So my neighbor has a horse riding school, and so she's got some pretty nice acreage and a bunch of horses, and hundreds of kids show up a day to ride. So we have that, and then my old neighbor is fucking on the verge of death, so he's old, and this huge, like little, it's probably, let's see, what do we have? We have 16, she's got 12. So what's that? 28 and he's got 40. So it would be close to 70 acres.
Yeah.
In this like prime area. So I'm sure that these developers are like sharpening their knives, trying to figure out how to put this whole thing together.
Like when he passes, they're going to be making a hard play for that land.
Yeah. And I guess if somebody knocked on our door and offered us something where I could go rebuild. Cause I mean, Power Athlete, the gym, the shop, I mean, house, everything's on one property. You know, when you came to Costa Mesa, we had these like little tiny light industrial park places. And one of the other reasons we moved is I kept trying to buy a building and I couldn't purchase a building. Cause every time I started talking to somebody about buying one, some guy would come drop like $3 million in cash to start a dispensary or grow in there.
Right.
So I was like battling it out with these dudes that are like, I got $3 million cash and I'm going to put a grow in this. And I'm like, fuck. So every time we got into something, we're like, hey, we want to buy this building. Great. And we get into it. And the guy's like, this guy just gave me $3 million cash for this building. I'm like, fuck. So
cash.
Yeah.
I mean, he was like, let me just get in my pockets here. And that's the problem, right? With the cannabis industry is it's all cash, right? Because it's not federally, it can't be like FDIC protected. Mm-hmm. So
what they do is everything in cash. And then they had a pretty interesting deal. And this is just goes to show you how wild the U.S. government is. The U.S. government realized that this was a real problem because they had all this cash. They didn't know what to do with it. They couldn't put it in banks. So the U.S. government was like, we'll take your cash and we'll give you a credit card with tokens or dollars on it in an account, a federal account.
So they could tax it.
Those guys are pretty sharp. I mean, they're making so much money. They don't mind paying taxes. But the U.S. government was like, you know, we'll just bypass this. So effectively, the U.S. government just started laundering drug money.
Yeah, right. Of course.
And then the cartels figured
this
out. Not
the first time, by the way.
No.
That's been done.
Yeah, many times.
The Iran-Contra affair was essentially the same thing.
Yeah. So then the cartels figured this out and they started shipping their cash across the border to Colorado and started using the dispensaries to
launder
their money. And the U.S. government's like, great, we'll take them. So Yeah, like you hear these stories, and I have some friends that it's run crazy. Security and do some really, you know, clandestine cool things with it. And it's like hearing these stories, you're like, holy shit. Like,
yeah,
we got in the wrong business. We should have.
Yeah, less stressful though, probably.
Yeah, well, it's so like by the hour tumultuous, right? Like you're operating outside of federal, you know, directive. Right. I mean, these are Schedule One drugs and this, and they're kind
state
of
legal, federally illegal.
Legal.
And which so, puts you in this really weird position.
Yeah. Kind of like we're seeing right here down in Texas at the border, where, you know, the federal government says, you know, you can't detain these people. And Texas is like, we have a
right to defend. Get rid of the razor wire. And they're like, we're keeping the razor wire.
Well, I mean, but at the end of the day, the federal government was designed in our, go back in our Constitution, I mean, was designed as a support for the states. I mean, ultimately the states make the decision, but they've seized so much power over the last few years.
Yep.
I got into an interesting argument on, do we still have capitalism? I'm like, no, we have corporatism where, I mean, you think capitalism's great in theory, but then when you get in and you have big corporations and payoffs and this and purchased, you know, people in DC, we have what's called corporatism. So capitalism's not the problem. It's just human nature.
Yep. Greed. So, as always.
Yeah. So we,
are we cold opening? Are we recording?
Yeah, we just fucking go. And then I'll go back and record.
That's kind of what I figured.
Yeah, and then I'll just go back and do an intro
after you leave. No, that's totally fine. Yeah, I think we got into the libertarian stuff last time I was on several years ago. And I'm probably not quite as much of a libertarian as I was then. And I think mostly because I'm what I see in the kind of cultural degradation over the last 10 years or whatever. But I'm certainly... all for the smallest federal government that we can possibly have. That hasn't changed at all. And I think that, if you look at the founding fathers and what they, just like you said, the Civil War, which we made about slavery, was really the war. It was truly our revolution. What we call the American Revolution was not a revolution. It was a war for independence. And the Civil War was a revolution because it was about the power of the states versus the power of the federal government. Yes. And so, of course, they made slavery, which obviously we would all agree was evil, but they made it like that was the thing that would galvanize the country as like, well, slavery is so evil. We have to make this terrible and make it illegal and preserve the union. But what they were really preserving was the power of the federal government.
Sure.
You know, so... like they say, power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. So,
I always think, small government makes more sense, right? I mean, Ronald Reagan preached about this and, you know, he preached about it, but then you mentioned the Iran-Contra deal where, you know, that was him using, I mean, whether or not Oliver North, who took the brunt of that, all that was directed by them. So, we said, hey, the worst thing you can ever hear is I'm the government and I'm here to help. Because anytime you involve government in anything, I mean, this border crisis down here, if they just privatized it and they hired and brought in companies to do it, they'd probably fix it in short time. But as I've always said, if you're going to put up walls and you're going to do all this, you have to have a process for people to come here that doesn't look like just, hey, I've been on this list for 30 years and nobody's called me. Actually need a way to bring people here in an orderly manner. And I think the reason that people are jumping coming the way they are is because there's nothing. I mean,
there's no order.
There's no order. And it's bureaucracy at its worst and people infighting. And I mean, just talking to any of the veterans that we've ever worked with in terms of dealing with the VA is like this just Leviathan that's impossible to navigate. And that's what happens in the federal government. I think right now the federal government might be like the largest employer in this country. We interrupt this episode with a shameless self-promotion. Power Athlete delivers battle-tested performance programming for every kind of athlete. So do you want to go from average Joe to MVP? Then dominate with Field Strong. Get stacked and jacked with Jack Street. Hustle in life and still build muscle with Grindstone. Fear no opponent with Dragon Slayer. Be harder than coffin nails with Hammer. Max out minimal equipment with Lean Enable. Or unlock those newbie gains with Bedrock. Get over to powerathletehq.com/training and choose your 7-day free trial right here, right now. Get lifting, get training, get in shape all while listening to the rest of this show.
No, they are. They are. And have been for a while, which again is a problem for sure. Right. And I've said before that, you know, don't read too much into this, but I don't know if you've ever heard this term, and let me make sure I get this right. But it's like at the federal level, I'm a libertarian. Have you heard this before? Mm-mm. And like at the state level, I'm a Republican. And at my city level, I'm a Democrat. And with my friends and family, I'm a socialist, which I'm not.
Yeah.
But you understand what I'm saying. Like I want to help the people that are closest to me. I'm sure. All for that. Right. But at the federal level, they're there to preserve the peace, like, which we also aren't very good at because we get in wars that don't have anything to do with us or whatever.
But you have to remember that the only thing that the United States exports is warfare. I mean, it's really
very our, well, by the way.
Yeah, no, we are better at warfare than anybody else has been on this planet.
Yes. I mean, and Eisenhower knew that the military industrial complex was going to be a problem.
Yeah. Well, so, I think in the 250 years that we have officially been the United States, I think there's been 17 years of peace. I mean,
isn't that wild?
It's by far our greatest export. I mean, the military industrial complex continues to churn, and this is, you know, how they sow the seeds. Yep. I mean, now
World War II is what brought us out of the Great Depression. I mean, so part of it's deeply ingrained in our history. I mean, we were the lowest point in our history was, at least arguably, was the Great Depression. And the fact that we held off on World War II for as long as we did, got in the war late, we were able to basically turn around the economy because of World War II. And now that set the standard for like, whoa, hold on. We can actually create an economic boom in this country via war. Like, let's do that. Mm-hmm. And it set the tone. And so now you've continued to see that for years in the Middle East and, you know, in sub-Saharan Africa, and you're seeing it in Ukraine and Russia and, you know, Eastern Europe. And it's like they're just looking for places to where can we cash checks, and
wars of occupation have always been transfers of wealth. So the greatest theft of the American taxpayer and the greatest transfer of wealth we've ever observed happened, you know, with this war on terror. I mean, can you imagine declaring a war on terror? That's like, hey, we're going to go out and find Santa Claus. Like, how do you know when you find it? How do you know when you remove terror?
It's an ethereal thing.
Well, right. It's an emotion. So we're going to fight the war on emotion instead of being like, hey, those are the bad guys. We're going to go out there and we get the bad guys. This is it. I mean, World War I and World War II were very simple. They sent people to war. And when the war effort was done and the bad guys were gone, then we get to come home. The war on terror is just an open-ended checkbook.
Sure.
And if you say this hey, this is a you know, fiscally irresponsible, then all of a sudden you're a bad American. And a wise person told me that, you know, wars of occupation is about transfers of wealth. I mean, look how many billionaires were made over the course of that 20 years from Halliburton, all these people selling this. I mean, we did a ton of government contracting, and the issue we ran into is we didn't have enough money to place in the right places to kind of spread around to make it, you know, go through.
Yep.
And, you know, it's the reason that Raytheon and these huge corporations are able to make these things happen. I mean, so when these bids come out, they have teams of writers that just write and submit on everything. Then they win it. They either make a decision, hey, do we do it? Do we just keep it or just let it die? Or do we go out and find somebody and act as a prime for it? And this episode of Power Athlete Radio is powered by Train Heroic, the most immersive strength training app experience on the market. We've built an online training business by partnering with Train Heroic to deliver all of our world-class training programs like Jack Street, Hammer, Field Strong, and Grindstone. To learn which Power Athlete training program best suits your goals, head to powerathletehq.com/training. And if you're a coach looking to build a business with the best training tech in the business, head to trainheroic.com/powerathletehq. And now back to the show.
In full transparency, something that you may not know about us is that we started landing government contracts this past year in 2023. And I think it was just because we were able to, we have 280,000 plus soldiers who are injured via overuse injuries alone. So we're not talking about, you know, PTSD, mental, we're talking about shin splints,
yeah,
blown out knees, right? Like plantar fasciitis, all that sort of stuff. And because what we do in the online coaching business is that we're able, and we have been able to, we're 9 years old now. Like it's crazy that we're coming up on our 10th anniversary and the business has just continued to grow and grow. And so, you know, we started in the business to consumer market and we're still there. And that's what Barbell Logic Online Coaching is. But we started to see one of the reasons that, you know, I wanted to talk to you today is about the model and the software that we built that I think is better for both the client and the coach from a flexibility perspective and a cost perspective. The coach makes more money per hour. It costs the client less. So we moved into that B2B sector. But the interesting thing was that we had several hundred soldiers pay out of their pocket over the last 10 years for our online coaching. And the thing that's important about that is that you can connect a soldier, an airman, or just any client, a business executive, a soccer mom, or whatever, to one of the best coaches in the world, regardless of where you live and regardless of where they live. Well, the thing we know about soldiers is that they're incredibly itinerant, right? So they're in San Diego for 2 years, and then they're in Germany for a year and a half, and then they're in Afghanistan for 2 years, and God knows where. Well, so what they'll do, we have tended to be decades behind in training as in general in the armed services, and they're starting to figure that out.
Yeah.
So even the places where maybe they had, you know, some great units or great wings or whatever, where you had guys that got really strong and really fit and really conditioned and they were badasses, then they would get deployed to Germany and they would get weaker and less conditioned. And in the time when you need them to be their best during combat deployment, they were at their worst. And I think you and I have talked about this before. Like this is a problem sometimes you see in the NFL, and definitely see it at the high school football level, where, you know, you get these kids super, super strong preseason, and then they get in the season, they're practicing every day, they're playing on Friday nights, like there's JV on Tuesday nights, you got all this, and they stop lifting. And when you need them to be the strongest and most conditioned for the playoffs, they're at their worst.
Sure.
And so I think the thing that the government saw for us, because we have great data, we've got a PhD analyst, the guy's unbelievable, statistician. So we were able to put together this data and show, look, like these soldiers don't get hurt. They get really strong. They have more, for lack of a better use of the word, like functional strength. Like it's actually the type of thing that you would do in combat. And we all know nobody's ever going to put on a 50 or 60 pound ruck and ruck for 10 miles. That's not something that's done in war anymore. So we can get them strong. We can meet the needs and dominate the PFTs and the physical fitness. Like again, and I would certainly argue that those are underwhelming, but we still can, you know, you've got to be able to check the boxes and they don't get hurt. And so, you know, the American taxpayer is paying billions and billions of dollars for hurt soldiers who are non-combat deployable. And oh, by the way, these guys want to be deployable. They want to be part of a team. They want to be part of their unit. They want to be part to not participate is a, you know, it's a real struggle for them. And so we were able to win in January of 23, a pretty large R&D contract to test out our system, specifically with EOD guys in the Air Force. So the explosive ordnance disposal.
Yeah. Yeah.
Guys, and that's gone very, very well. The government's offered a big extension to that, and now we are moving into those EOD guys are all in pretty dang good shape. They're not officially special forces in the Air Force, but they're basically like special operations type guys.
They have a unique skill set, and then they get attached. I mean, we deal with the same thing with Naval Special Warfare. The place that we saw this even worse was we were brought in by the Surgeons Corps to work with the 18th Airborne Corps. So of the 90,000, I think roughly something like 13 to 18,000 were non-deployable, which means that their injuries were not allowing them to deploy. And then there was another huge percentage that were on some form of profile where they had limited action. And it was all overuse stuff.
That's right.
I mean, and it was all stemming from their training being related to running push-ups and sit-ups. So it was all this like shoulder, shin splint, ankle, back issues. And we went through, we taught, I think, 16 seminars for the 18th Airborne Corps and put people into groups, basic barbell stuff, like sprinting, running, change of direction, taught seminars on how to actually move. And injury rates plummeted and everything looked great. Went to contracting and obviously it kind of died in that piece. And then recently I was asked to be the keynote speaker for the H2F program out at Fort Bliss. So I got to go out there, and as I was sitting there looking at the program that they implemented, it was very similar to our program, and the guy that was our liaison was now the head of that program at ForceCom.
Oh, of course.
So, and but they added about 30% too much bullshit, increased the price from, you know, 23 million to 31 to a billion. So it's pretty interesting doing that job and seeing those individuals, because those are the people that need it the most. And you know, in a way, it's kind of as, and I know this is kind of a weird parenting deal, but when your kids are little and they don't know any better, it's your responsibility to point them in the right direction. For example, if there's a hot stove there or there's something hot, don't grab that. It's going to be hot. And hopefully they don't have to, they can listen to you. They don't have to grab it themselves.
Yeah. They don't have to learn the lesson on their own. They can learn it from your wisdom.
Dealing with the soldiers, they're just there to do what's told. And, hey, this is what I need to do. And then all of a sudden, when you're telling them, hey, these injuries aren't your fault, this is due to poor training, let's fix all this, they were so receptive. And it was an amazing opportunity to go in that just didn't happen. Yep. And so good on you guys for having the ability and the moxie to navigate that, because it was...
I think the reason that it's gone well for us is that, as far as I know, and I could be wrong, I think we are the only online coaching program that's ever landed, you know, multiple contracts with the military, because, you know, there's lots of, like, we both, you know, like Soren Expert, Soren, they'll land contracts for equipment, or you see other companies that land.
It's because the Army spends money, or the military spends money, on bullets, beans, and bullets. Bombs, bullets, and beans, and boots.
There you go. Yeah.
Right. Yep. It's the way the saying goes. So they love to buy equipment. Yep. So going in and buying, you know, 10,000 trap bars and doing all these things that they can at the end of the year be like, we have these in in inventory. Now, the problem is nobody knows how to use any of this shit.
That's right. That's the problem. Yeah. Right.
And so they brought us in now to teach that.
To actually teach. Right.
Yeah.
Yep. And so, and for us, I think the advantage that we have is that, you know, again, it doesn't matter where you are. You're in Afghanistan, you're in Kandahar, you're in like middle of nowhere. They bring these big, you know, shipping containers out. They've got squat racks in it. They've got, you know, Rogue racks or Sornex racks or whatever. They pull them out. They mount them to the edge. They've all got barbells. They've got weights. They've got kettlebells. They've got a lot of this stuff that they need to use out in the middle of the desert. But they don't have anybody to continue to make sure that their technique is strong, that their programming is correct. And even if even if somebody sells them programming, this is... When I use the word ignorant, I don't mean it in a negative. It's just like you were talking about your kids. It's our job to help educate our children, as well as other people that we coach, to pull them out of that ignorance. And we've seen for years, I see it in my own life. I'm sure you've seen it in yours. Like the vast majority of coaches that work for us are also clients, including myself. I have a coach because even though I've lifted competitively for 25 years, and even though I know exactly how to do all the things, I will let form creep come in over time. And so even though, and we do seminars and we do hands-on stuff as well, it's interesting. You'll see somebody that you saw 6 months before and you got them squatting perfectly in that one session. And I think in any one session, an in-person coaching scenario, seminar, is you're going to get better bang for your buck. But long-term, if you only see them once every 6 months or once every year, or when they aren't deployed and they come back to the United States, you start to recognize like, man, we've got all sorts of form creep here. You're not training in an intelligent way. And so I think that's the thing that we've been able to do. And because we're able to do that from anywhere in the world to soldiers anywhere in the world and do it at a really nominal, minimal cost, then the government's finally seeing that, hey, just paying all this money for the squat racks and the barbells and the weights isn't actually leading to the outcomes that we want. We still have a bunch of hurt soldiers. And so it's been great. So I'm still, as much as we talk about, you know, that certainly I know there are issues and problems with the military industrial complex. I am grateful. I take it very serious that I'm still an incredibly proud American. Every time I go and visit these guys, these EOD guys in their building, and you walk through the hallway and they've got the memorial hallway, and there's, man, these kids have died. I'm talking about, you know, 20-year-old, 22, you know, men and women who have, and I'm thinking to myself, like, these guys understand what they're undertaking. They understand the risk of their job. And so if we can play a small role in helping them become more resilient and less vulnerable to injury so that they can better protect the American people, whether I agree with where the government is sending them or not, to me, that's still a huge honor. Well, and so it's been great for us.
There's a separation between, you know, obviously policymakers and the government and the people, the commander in chief, that are pointing the finger and sending these people into harm's way. And I completely agree. At the individual soldier level, those individuals are not only the best of us, but they deserve the best app.
Absolutely. Like, they're amazing.
Yeah. They need the best training. And, you know, like I was, a couple of years ago, we were at Sornex for, Summer Strong, and, Kyle Carpenter, who was Congressional Medal of Honor winner, Marine, got up and gave not only one of probably the best presentations, the best talks I've ever heard. You know, he was on a roof with a bunch of his, you know, Marine buddies, and, you know, they're in Afghanistan, grenade goes on the roof and he dives on it to save his friends. Like the most selfless act. And he starts the story from, like, after the explosion and what he felt in this, and then, like, you know, the amount of surgeries he's had. And, like, I'm listening to this story, and, you know, he was pretty disfigured, and, you know, he just wanted to go down. And, like, the story that hit me the most was he like went down in the middle of the night and he just wanted to have a bowl of cereal, and he, like, his hands, he couldn't do it, and he started crying. Mm. And his mom came down, and he said his mom held him and, like, helped him have cereal. And I realized, like, he was still a kid. Like, he was at his mom's house. It wasn't like he was married and an adult. Right. And it's like, these are the kids we send. We send these 18-year-old kids.
That's right.
Who gets blown up, and he's back at his mom's house, and his mom's probably our age. And she's over here taking this. And, like, it was, that was really impactful, because not only was he probably the most heroic thing I've ever heard, like the most gangster shit I've ever heard. You see a grenade and I'm going to save my friends, you know, fought through it. And, like, the resilience and bright and shine and just the spark in that kid's eye was like, damn, like, I was never so humbled to hear him speak, but also to, like, you know, have that moment. So, but, you know, every time we go out and we work with the military, and, you know, we still have contracts with Naval Special Warfare and we work those guys, I still think of that kid and be like,
yeah,
this is who we're preparing, and they deserve every opportunity to be the best. And the problem is when these guys are up at the top making policy for hundreds of thousands of people, it's very hard to remember that the training and what they're implementing is helping individuals like this come home back to their moms. So it's,
and I think that's
a lot of responsibility.
I think for other companies, strength coaching companies out there, just, or government contractors in general, you recognize that if you wholeheartedly believe in what you're doing, and that there's virtue to it. It's morally good. And so for us, we've all coached, you, your team, my team, we've coached for decades at this point. We know how to get people strong. We know how to make sure that they don't get hurt. But I think that what most companies can't do is cross the chasm to write the proposals to make sure that when it gets in front of the policymakers, that they can see the value in what you're doing. And one of the places that I've just been incredibly blessed over the years is that I have this incredible team. Man, I couldn't write those proposals.
Yeah.
But my editor in chief is an attorney. And, you know, our full graphic design team, we've got a team that can write incredible proposals, so that very quickly, you know, these proposals, as you know, like anything with the government's, like, everything's got to be the same. And, you know, they don't want anything pretty. And it's not like a pitch deck with lots of pictures and colors and stuff. And so what you're trying to do is you're trying to follow all the rules. And it's like 99% text and just enough pop to make them, when they flip through the 17-page proposal, the policymaker, it, for whatever reason, it jumps off the page at them and they say, oh, this is actually a thing that would save American taxpayers billions of dollars. And, so for us, we've tried to put as much effort and work and education and study behind the writing of the proposals to land the contracts as we do in the actual coaching of the end user. And then once we get the contract, then what you're doing is you're really selling buy-in to the end user. You've got to get the buy-in. And that isn't a 17-page document that looks like a white paper. That has to be these, you know, again, you're talking to kids. You have to get them excited about being badasses. And you also have to get them to believe, and it should be accurate, that you are an expert in the field. And so they see you, if they see you as an expert in the field, they trust that you know how to get them there. They're excited about the program. They're excited about the technique breakdown that you're going to give them, regardless of where they're stationed in the world. Then you get the end user. So you almost have to break this up from a government contracting perspective into two steps. Step one is, can we write the proposals that get to the policymakers to actually get them to sign off on this and say, yeah, this is worth it. And then two, once you do that, how do you get buy-in from the end users? And both those are a challenge.
Yeah.
But man, we've learned a ton. And again, it's a huge honor to be able to work with those guys for sure.
Yeah, it's you're right. I mean, the contracting piece, I know when we submitted these massive contracts, I mean, you know, you have that's great that you have all the stuff in-house. We brought in contractors and people that, you know, not only help you write the proposal, but then the people that do all the editing and this, I mean, putting all this stuff together and then putting it through.
Yeah, we have one of those too. A consultant. Yeah, because they know how to dot the I's and cross the T's. And, I don't think you can win those without those type of people.
They can't even be submitted without those type of people, because there is a very specific format in which it has to be written. And, and there's people like, these massive kind of defense contractors have teams of these guys.
They might have
50 teams of five guys, and every guy has the head guy, the writer, and they have all different pieces. And what happens is all these contracts get released and they just kind of divvy them up. They submit on everything, and these guys and that's their full-time gig. They got to have all these,
Well, they've got it down to a science. And you talked about like Raytheon or Lockheed or even lately, I think SpaceX is starting to figure that kind of stuff out too. That's like, look, there's a lot of money to be made here, but it's going to require, there's a lot of human capital that has to go into this to build out the science of writing these proposals. And you're right. So for our company, I think we've got a leg up. There's probably a moat for us at our size and valuation now that's beyond most strength and conditioning companies. And of course, we are a tiny speck of dust compared to those, to the Raytheons and the Lockheeds and the SpaceXs out there in the world. And so luckily I'm not selling rockets.
we're in an interesting space in that, we did kind of that light side or the white side. I mean, like big army, and we've done that. It's a lot easier for us to kind of operate on like the other side of the house in terms of, you know, special operations commands, just because it's a lot more strategic and a lot more pinpointed. And, you know, we worked with those guys for a long time. So that's a much easier contracting process, because normally what they do is they go out and they get, they'll reach out to people and ask for three or four bids. We submit, we've done it before. And then, now all of a sudden they, and then it's best practice and this and best value and know how to navigate that. But those big ones, those are, that's why these companies reach out and they submit on it. Then they come and, they act as a prime and bring in people and contract people to come in and execute this stuff.
For sure.
So
for sure.
It's a lot of money to be made. It just, like, having kind of navigated, you realize that it's just a black hole that they throw money into, and whether or not, programs work, whether or not they did. I mean, we got reached out to, I think it was somewhere in South America, and they had purchased something like 100 Beaver boxes, which are these kind of, conic boxes, 20-40 foot, full of equipment. They're kind of modular. They pull apart, they open up, you put them out the racks. They had, they did not have anybody to certify them on how to use them, so they could not cut the locks.
Oh my God.
And then the soldiers finally just cut the locks and started pulling it out. And then command said, you don't have a certification to be able to do this. So they reached out to us and were like, hey, can you design us a certification so that our guys can open the boxes
and start set up the thing.
Yeah, to set them up. And I was like, yeah, I mean, we can do whatever you want. We're pretty agile. And then as we got into the pieces and, hey, like, what do you need? Let's get into this. They just took the boxes back.
Yep.
So all of a sudden they just loaded them up on a boat and they weren't there anymore. And the guy's like, we missed our window. So it's so frustrating. You would think that they would just open the equipment and be like, hey, go figure it the fuck out. You guys are this, but it's not how the U.S. military works. So it's interesting to say the least.
So. Yeah, but I do think that as the old guard continues to retire out, that I think it's getting better. I'm also an optimist. You know, I think that there are that old style of what we need to do is just, you know, put on the Sophie shorts and go run 50 miles a day and throw on the pack. And they are realizing that that's not a smart way to train. But until that old guard that really loves to just go out and run all the time or ruck all the time or do whatever the thing is and get the overuse injuries until they actually retire out and the younger guard comes in, then we're not going to see widespread change. You know, we've seen obviously updates to really all of the armed forces in the United States with their PFTs moving a little more towards strength. And we know, you know, trap bar deadlifts that, you know, our wives could do for, you know, 50 reps, no problem. So it's not exact, but it is one step in the right. It's an incremental step in the right direction. And so
I think over 70 years ago, I have, you can't really see it on that wall right there. I have John F. Kennedy's, The Soft American that I think came out in 60, I think it was 61. Yep. But
read it many times.
Yep. As I was asked to go speak at the War College on, you know, PT tests and really, you know, how like the Army kind of got into this. And in World War One, we pulled kids off of the farm and we sent them to Germany and sent them over to Europe. We didn't really give them any training. We just pulled these kids out and they were all pretty fit, pretty strong. There were no deployments. They literally got on a boat, went to Europe and said, you don't come home until, you know, the Fuhrer's gone or the bad guy's gone.
Sure.
And these kids could dig. They were, you know, pretty fit.
Yeah, they were hard workers.
Yeah. I mean, we pulled them off the farm. All of a sudden, World War One ends. We send the kids back. Not all of them go back to the farm. Many of them stayed in the city. And then when World War Two hits, they put out a draft. And something like 70% of the first call-up were actually non-deployable, that were not able to meet the physical standards. So we had a huge issue. We go over, we win the war, and then they came back. They said, what are we going to do? And that's when the PT test came into it. And one of the original like doctrines within that first PT test also had training, said, and it was pretty wild. Actually, the original PT test and the original training doctrine that they put out, if we had just stayed there, we would have been fine.
Right.
And
we continued to move the goalpost.
Yeah, we had to. But one of the statements that I heard was, training for war is training for sport is training for war. So that was one of my presentations, because they had intramural football games and rugby, and they played all these different sports.
Sure.
And they felt that playing football and you know, these different sports that they put together prepared them for what they needed, you know, running here and doing this. And the training programs were actually fairly good. I was looking at like these 1940s, 1950s training manuals. I was like, shit, if we had just stayed there. But then all of a sudden we get into the 70s, gets into jogging. Next thing, jogging becomes a big craze. It's too difficult to do this. And now all of a sudden we get into the PT test in the 80s, which was, you know, being able to run 2 miles and push-ups and sit-ups.
Yeah, it's specialized, the PFT for soldiers, just the same way that we've seen the same problem in sport with kids, right? With and I don't know if you remember Tom Myslinski writing his master's thesis on the development of the Russian conjugate system. This was posted on Elite FTS like way back in the late 90s.
Yeah.
And you know, he talked about how the Soviets for years, they had all their kids do all of the things. They all played soccer, they all did gymnastics, they all swam, they all
dancing,
calisthenics,
dancing.
That's right. Yeah. All the stuff. And they what they found is they would actually get often beat by the Western countries in the junior Olympics because they wouldn't let them specialize until later. And so they held them back and they just kept giving them this like broad amount of motor pattern development. And they were incredible. You know, they just became better and better athletes, better and better athletes, better and better athletes. And then at 17, 18, depending on what the sport was, obviously gymnastics, you know, it's, I don't know, 13 or 14. But for Olympic weightlifting, it was like 17, 18. It wasn't at 13. Now you get to specialize and they dominated us because they allowed them to be non-specialized for so long, right? And I still think that that is, you know, that I've got my issues with CrossFit, but I think one of the things that CrossFit from the very early days tried to do was to say, look, we are not going to specialize. And that can lead at long term to a jack of all trades, master of none.
Yeah.
But what we've traded that off for is the dad who thinks that his second grader is going to go play Major League Baseball, pulls him out of all the sports and only plays baseball for the rest of his life. Guess what happens? Kid burn either gets hurt, you know, blows out his rotator cuff at 15, or just burns out and decides he hates it. And that, like, the stories of Tiger Woods, the stories of Andre Agassi, of those guys that specialize, those are the literally one in a billion, not one in a million. That's that.
Yeah.
And so you want your kid to be look, we know, you know, you obviously you were an incredible athlete. One of our biggest investors was an all pro offensive lineman as well. Jordan Gross for the Carolina Panthers is a really good buddy of mine and coach him. And, you know, he sees this, that it's these parents come in and they try to specialize their kids early. Well, then we did the exact same thing in the military. We said, what we need you to do is run. Well, like, when do you run now in 2023, 2024? Like, you're not running 30 miles. That's not combat scenario. So they're unprepared for combat scenario.
Well, you brought up CrossFit and it's pretty interesting. I mean, if you look at and you understand strength conditioning and more importantly, some of the early writings in terms of, you know, general physical preparation, you needed general physical preparation, which looked like lifting weights and running and the things that you do within the confines of the gym. But there was always an assumption that you would move from GPP down to SPP, sport specific preparation.
That's right.
And, you know, when all of a sudden CrossFit, and I always wonder if it was self-serving or Glassman just, you know, thumbed his nose at everything, so he didn't know. But when he came out with the sport of GPP, the sport of general physical preparedness, I was like, this is like my favorite white chocolate ice cream. I mean, it just didn't make sense to me. And, you know, there had to be, now the minute you start talking about sport, now you're moving down this ladder towards sport specific preparation. And it just so happens that, you know, the sport of CrossFit is their evolution into SPP. So calling it the sport of general physical preparedness is insane.
Right.
But, you know, I mean, they were, if you go look at a lot of Verkhoshansky stuff with science and practice, they have a lot of little cool little sketches and they'll show calisthenics and something very, very similar. Yep. But those guys, you know, they also knew that there were breeding grounds for different sports. Like, for example, like the best female pole vaulter in the world was a gymnast who just happened to get a huge growth spurt and grow to 5'8".
Right.
So they had all these different kind of selectory early ones, and they could kind of partition and pull their athletes out because they had already had, you know, the ability to be able to maneuver themselves and do these different things.
Well, so. And there is, that is one of the very few, if not the only advantage of communism, right, is that you, when you show ability in athletics, and I'm talking about, you know, the Soviet sort of communism set, you know, 70s, 80s, you could, I mean, everybody's so poor that they can't eat, but you show some ability in sport. And so you've heard the joke that I think Louis used to make it, right? That, or whoever, like, the, you know, somewhere there's a little Chinese girl warming up with your Max. And it's that, but the reality is that, like, if you didn't perform, you get pulled out of the government housing, you get pulled out of the government food, you get pulled out of the, so horrible form of government. But amazing, because from an athletic standpoint, it gave them control over making sure that they could dominate across the board, and they had figured out a great system. You know, some the stuff that Bondarchuk wrote. I mean, with, and like you said, Verkhoshansky and Zatsiorsky. Like, man, I just used to, I felt like I found the Holy Grail in the late 90s. In, you know, when I was in university, going to, you know, down in the basement of the library and finding those books, and was just like, how is it possible that this stuff that the Soviets were doing in the 70s and 80s is still 40 years ahead of what we're doing in the Western world.
Yeah. No, it's when you were talking about these kids specializing and getting burned out, I was like, oh, you've obviously been to Texas. I have twin daughters and my little boy, seven. So my daughter's a fairly decent basketball player. So she went to, you know, like her school has, so she's in sixth grade. They're not allowed to play school sports. That's like a, you know, like for their school until seventh grade. So seventh and eighth, right. They kind of do this. So she plays on these select teams and these clubs. Yeah. Yep. And the amount of teams that she's getting, earlier before this podcast, my wife's like, hey, she got invited to play on the select team. And I'm like, that's three teams that she's been invited to play on. And, you know, she still does jujitsu. So we went and did that last night. And so, like, I'm like, hey, we need to pick up something else. She just can't play basketball all the time. She needs another sport. So that's the right. Jujitsu's been good because we can do that at night. And, you know, I also train, you know, some of the top jujitsu players in the world. So they're, you know, like family going up and doing that. So we're really lucky in that way. But my son plays basketball. He plays baseball. And there's like two or three other sports. And that's another thing. Like these kids are six and seven and they got to go to tryouts. And based upon the tryouts, they're putting them in different, you know, divisions.
Yeah.
And it's pretty interesting because a lot of the parents hold the kids back. So they're playing, you know, he's right. All of a sudden, I'm like, look at out there.
Older than.
Well, yeah. I'm like out there and I'm like, dude, these kids look like a year older than him.
That's because they are.
And it's
that's
because right. They are a year older. And I'm like, damn. And he's like, dad, they're so much taller than me. I'm like, don't worry. You got good genetics, dude. You'll be fine. You might just be a little bit of a late bloomer. But it's so amazing. And even talking to these parents, how wrapped up they get. And I tell them, I'm like, I played in the NFL for a decade. I didn't play football until I went to high school.
Right.
But all the sports that I played growing up leading up to that were drivers for allowed me to go play football. So, you know, and the fact that like they're not handing out college scholarships. I mean, they're not even going to hand out college scholarships anymore. I don't know if you saw the interview with Deion Sanders talking about I think they were only offering one or two scholarships to high school kids. Yeah. He's like, why would I waste money on a high school kid
when I can just buy one?
And he's like, the money's there. It's turned into free agency. He's like, what they're going to have to do is they're going to have to actually institute a draft in some way for these high school kids. Mm. And they're going to have to tell the NCAA is going to have to come in and tell these teams, hey, you got to bring in 10 kids. Because what's going to happen is there's going to be, either it's going to go JCs. I mean, how this farm league works. And they've really created a hell of a problem for themselves with this NIL.
For sure.
But these kids are getting paid. I mean, and it's actually keeping them in college because I think some of them are making more than the pros.
Sure.
Like I saw the deal, I think it was Arch Manning was making like eight times what Brock Purdy's making.
Right.
But that kid's about to get paid, so it's not going to be fair.
Yeah,
but
I was going to say.
Yeah, you're
the lowest paid player on his team, but not for long.
Yeah, no, he's going to hit it, especially he's able to go in with the Super Bowl and play pretty well, which is going to be interesting because I have a feeling the NFL wants Taylor Swift on stage with a Super Bowl trophy.
Are you rooting for the Chiefs, having played for the Chiefs?
So I did not want the Chiefs. I root for the Chiefs, I do, and I root for the Eagles because I played for them. I was looking for a different game. I wanted to see Baltimore versus Detroit.
Sure. I think that's what most of the world.
Yeah. I think everybody.
Not me, because I live in Missouri.
Well.
So I wanted the Chiefs.
Yeah.
But it was a rough year, and I thought, there's no way. You know, it's the Chiefs played terrible throughout the season, but they figured out when to turn it on.
Yeah. I mean, you can't count Andy Reid out. I mean, he's been there so many times and that team is already, you know, pretty intact with their core players, already won two Super Bowls. So I think Patrick Mahomes has been to six NFC championship games in the last six years.
AFC every single year as a pro, the guy's made it to the championship, to the AFC championship game.
He's a pretty good player.
That's insanity. Yeah. Pretty good. We talk about, you know, the players in the NFL in the United States are the best athletes in probably the world, but certainly in the United States. That guy is maybe the best or certainly in the top handful athletes in the entire NFL of all the other best athletes in the world.
Yeah.
What a weird feeling that would be.
He's special.
He is special. For sure.
Did you see the play where he got taken down from the back? And he like peeled himself back and I was like, ooh, shit, he's going to blow his knee out. And he somehow kicked his leg around, rolled over and got out of it.
Yep.
And then they were showing some stuff. I guess he does this in his training, which is so full of shit.
Because I saw that too. Like he practices for this sort of thing.
No. No. They showed him doing a back bend like in yoga. There is no way to replicate that.
Right.
And the fact that, you know, Tom Brady would have blown out both knees if he had gotten hit like that.
Right.
And just about every other quarterback. And somehow that guy was able to bend and move. And I mean, just a special player. So I'm excited for the Super Bowl. Don't get me wrong. I had wanted to see Detroit. I was completely blown away that Baltimore dropped the ball when they did. I mean, as well as their defense played and as well as I'm totally forgetting their quarterback's name.
Lamar
Jackson.
Lamar.
As well as he played through the season. I mean, they got Odell Beckham Jr. I mean, they had all of the weapons available to them to go out at home and not win that game and get dominated the way they did. I did not see that one coming.
And then
Detroit not being able to go out and beat the Niners, I was blown away. So am I excited about the Super Bowl? Yeah, I'm excited because the Kansas City's there. Is it the game I wanted to see? No. On social media, obviously I follow the Chiefs. My social media is flooded with nothing but Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift, which I'm super happy for him. If you can find love in the world, I'm all for you. That chick is gangster. I mean, self-made billionaire. I mean, how can you not discredit her? I just like to hear some of the other stories, that are happening in the NFL or at the Super Bowl more so than, you know, two 34-year-old adults that probably should be married with kids by now and they're somehow starlight lovers. I was like, I was married with kids at 34. I know people that were grandparents by that age.
So
it's funny to me.
Well, I think both of them come across as very sort of immature. I mean, that's, you know, her fan base is still 13-year-old girls.
Yeah.
And so it's, you know, if I didn't have two teenage daughters and you just asked me how old is Taylor Swift, I'd be like, I don't know, what is she, like 25? Like, no, she's 35 or whatever.
She's 34 is what I saw. But the thing that blows me away is you would hope that like as people would age and, you know, maybe parenthood does this to people, but like the weird vindictiveness and like, and I mean, she writes these, you know, her albums of this, I mean, which are going to sell, you know, I'm sure monstrous. I mean, the chick crushes it, but like, it's like they're not in their 20s.
Nope.
So yeah, nope. It's a little odd, but
yeah, agreed.
It makes for good media and the NFL, you know, the press days, I mean, all the stuff for the Super Bowl is like maybe it's the algorithm I clicked into because of the Chiefs, but I try not to click on anything because I want to see other stories. And it's just like nothing but those two getting hit me 24/7. Is it as bad as the media in Missouri?
Oh, it's the same thing. And I'm not on social media very much, but it's, you know, same sort of thing. As a matter of fact, I like Jason Kelce. I think he's hilarious. And so I like watching him, and yet it's still, I'll watch more of his clips, and yet it still wants to feed me Travis and Taylor. So it's the algorithm.
Well, I can't root against the Chiefs, but I'm kind of interested to see if they do win and the whole thing goes down. Like I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but you know, and these NFL players that have ever come out and been like, "Oh, the NFL has a script and all this is full of shit." But I've definitely felt as an active player, there were moments where we were in some key positions where all of a sudden weird things happened that changed the direction of a game. Like, for example, you know, we're playing Tampa and we're going down on an 18-play drive and they call 3 TV timeouts. Hmm. You know, like shit like that where you're like, you know, this doesn't make any sense. Or you'll get like a weird penalty in this, or, you know, all of a sudden you can get 2 back-to-back penalties. And it just felt like there were these like, I don't know what the word is, like almost like the hands of fate, you know, where they go and they're like,
stacked against you just a little bit.
Yeah. Like they flick a butterfly and next thing you know, a nuclear reactor blows up. That's, you know, no NFL player fixes a game. Nobody gives a script. I mean, no, you know, no player goes out and they're like, oh, this guy's doing this. No, he was just a pussy. He didn't want to hit that dude. So there's a lot of things that I think people are thinking, but I do think that if you were going to change the trajectory of a game to be in one direction over the other, there's subtle ways that they could do it that don't involve the players.
Sure.
And if somebody handed me a script or asked me to do something or do anything, I'd been like, no problem, I'll tell you what, you know, I would have been happily told this podcast. But
I do love that the NFL has actually played into that. And, you know, you've seen the commercials where they're all sitting around, you know, before the season, they're all sitting in the conference room and they're talking about, okay, what's the script for this year? You've seen this? Like with Ian Peele and oh, dude.
They did?
The NFL has actually, like, yeah, their marketing team, genius.
Oh.
It's genius marketing. I mean, they bring everybody's in a conference room. They've got, like, they had the Kelsey's mom. She's on a Zoom call, so she's on a screen and stuff. And they're like, "What about this?" And they're throwing out these scenarios for the year. And oh, the NFL has just played into that. They're like, "Hey, let's use it." And so, which I think is that's genius marketing. Yeah. So
well,
we can play into this.
Yeah, no, I didn't even see that because I've probably just been so flooded with Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift.
It will be interesting that will absolutely be in the commercials next year. That they did this in the beginning of the season, so it's always like during preseason, during like training camp, as you're getting the build up into the season, that's when they played those commercials. I'm sure that next year now they're going to have to involve that at some point. So we'll see if Taylor actually shows up on the commercial, but it's
pretty good. In years past, the best games have always been the championship games. So the AFC, NFC championships games were always way better than the Super Bowl.
Sure.
I wasn't necessarily blown away by any of those games. So I'm hoping for actually just a good football game that I can watch.
Yeah, for sure. We're the same. And it's good. So I'd love to talk a little bit about what does coaching look like for you guys right now? And I think I told you guys this. So this is not intended. I don't want to make this a commercial for what we do.
I'm interested.
I want to be fully transparent about it. So because we've grown Barbalogic Online Coaching over the last 9 years it's definitely one of the larger online coaching companies in the world. We get a staff of about 100. It's gone very, very well. You know, we just closed a Series A raise. And so, you know, that's the valuation of the company. I can't even wrap my mind around what it has done. And of course, we talked about the government contracts. When COVID hit, we had, man, I want to be careful the way that I say this, that for all intents and purposes, I think we have perfected the online coaching system, the model of online coaching. Now, I'm never going to be satisfied with it. So I take that not as an overly arrogant thing.
Let's take a step back. Like can you define online coaching? I mean,
I think it's super important. So the thing for me, and this is, I think, one of the things that we're trying to actually talking about the marketing and the algorithm. Boy, if you could just get a little taste of some of like what you're seeing with Travis and Taylor, you know, to be able to push this out. The world has thought, and still does, I think, that online coaching typically is buying a program from a coach. And certainly when I first launched online coaching, my background story is that I started a gym called Strong Gym in 2008. I had won my pro card in Strongman. I always like to joke with guys like you that, you know, so we were both professional athletes. I just made no money at mine. And so, I went from being the best amateur, strongman in the United States to the worst pro in the entire world overnight. But I ran Strong Gym. I had completed my master's degree to be a high school principal. Thought I was going to be a teacher. So God, I'm so glad that I'm not in the public school system. I haven't been there since 2012. Started running the gym in 2008. By 2012, when I left education, that gym had grown to be the largest privately owned strength gym in the country. And we were winning powerlifting gym of the year, over Westside and over Super Training. I couldn't believe it. Like, it was nuts. But the problem that I saw was, even though the gym was successful, that there was a problem with the in-person, what I would call the antiquated traditional personal training method, which was, one, it's prohibitively expensive for almost everybody. And two, it locks both the clients and the coaches into a specific location, into a specific schedule, Like I've got to be at the gym at 5 a.m. Monday, Wednesday, Friday morning to train the same, you know, to train the same person. And then I've got maybe an hour off. I've got to deal with the commute. And so even if you think you're charging $100 an hour or $50 an hour, whatever you're charging, you're not making that because by the time you do the commute, by the time you get the little time off between clients, by the time you show up a few minutes early and make sure the gym's all set up. And so even though I love my job as a gym owner, I started to feel in bondage a little bit to that schedule and location. And then on top of that, you're the type of client who can afford personal training. And I'm in Southwest Missouri, right, with low cost of living, and it's still $600, $700, $800, $900 a month. That type of client travels a lot on business, travels a lot on vacation. And when they traveled, they didn't train. Sure. Which meant that they were either paying for sessions that they weren't using, or I didn't get paid because they were traveling. If I wanted to travel and go on vacation, I didn't get paid. And so I started to see all of these problems and the lack of efficiency of the traditional personal training model. And so when I started to focus on online coaching, what I knew I didn't want to do was just sell programs. I wanted to actually coach. I wanted to actually break down technique. And we were in a position in those days where phones were just starting to get good enough with their video that I could provide programming for my clients. My clients would video their lifts. They would video. So if they were going to do, you know, 3, 4, 5 sets of squats, they would video the last set of squats or the heaviest set of squats. I would teach them, send them videos on, you know, where to put the camera. And so they would video that, they would upload it. And this is back before we owned our own software. In the old days, we're using, you know, Google Sheets and a forum, and they're uploading.
Sounds super hacky.
A YouTube, yeah. You know, it was, yeah. I mean, this is 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And then we were able to move to a third party software, and it's one of the largest ones. And I have nothing bad to say about them. We were their largest client for 7 years, I think, and had a great relationship with them. But the problem that we saw there was that we had built our reputation on not just high quality programming, but actually building relationship with our clients in the same way that you would in personal training, except that while that, let's say a typical client training session takes an hour, I can break down that entire workout in 4 or 5 minutes and I can break down all their techniques. So what that means is that I can charge the client less than they would pay for personal training. I don't just have to be stuck in Springfield, Missouri, and who can afford my services at $700, $800, $900 a month in this little town in Southwest Missouri. I now get to expand my client pool to the entire world. Clients that are looking for good coaches can be connected to expert coaches all over the world. They can train at their home gym. They can train at the big box Globo gym. They can train in the hotel gym. They can train in the resort gym. So if they travel, they train. And so what we started to see was that the consistency and the compliance and the accountability was always there, more so than my best clients I ever had for in-person coaching. And so when I say online coaching, I'm talking about personalized programming where you are connected with what we believe is the best coach on the planet for you. The way we do it at Barbalogic Online Coaching is you have two options. You can actually go on the website and actually fill out a few questions, and it will tell you like your top hits. These are the top 8 coaches that you match with. You can then read through their bios and see what they're all about, and then you can choose one, or you can sign up, and then we have our customer service team really make sure that we read through your questionnaire, you know, very carefully and pair you with the right coach. That coach sets up a quick Zoom call with you. But then for the most part, it is you receive personalized programming on an app that we've now developed called Turnkey Coach. You receive that as a client directly to your phone. You take video of yourself lifting, you upload the video, and within 24 hours, your coach has fully broken down your workout. Our software, Turnkey Coach, has an integrated screen recorder in it. So if I were coaching you, like, all right, John, you're like, you see yourself squatting, you hear my voiceover, you see me picture in picture, and I'm walking through those things with you about cleaning up technique or this looked great. We're going to go up 5 pounds on the next workout, or we're going to go up 10 pounds on the next workout, or you didn't quite hit depth, so we're going to redo that same weight or back you off a little bit. But it's not just about the technique. And I think the technique is a separating factor for us in online coaching. There's personalized programming, there's technique, but man, there's also, we're always taking a few seconds of every workout breakdown and trying to make some personal connection. And it's not fake, it's authentic. Like I am close friends with all of my clients because I know what they do. I know what their wives do. I know how many kids they have. I know when their kids' birthdays are. I know when they've got a stressful day at their job. I know when their kid was up all night throwing up. And the problem with selling programs is it doesn't take any of that stuff into account. You didn't go to sleep last night because you had a fight with your wife, or because your kid was throwing up all night long, or because you got the flu. I just got over literally the worst flu I've ever had in my life this last week, and I'm finally better this last day or two. Those programs don't take that stuff into account. So I think quality online coaching is very personalized programming, is connected with the perfect coach for you, includes technique breakdown, and relationship building and trust, which we gain by making sure that our clients see us as having ability, integrity, and benevolence, that we actually care about our clients. Now, here's the thing, and then I'll let you ask questions. When I explain that to coaches who are dabbling in online coaching, that seems like a level of service that is unsustainable. Like, how could I possibly do that at that level of service and actually spend less time? But what we found is that because of the efficiencies that have been worked into the software, my COO and project manager was in lean manufacturing for years, and we have spent hundreds and hundreds of hours and millions of dollars making sure that the software is so efficient. Like we'll have our coaches literally take their cell phone, shoot over their shoulder, and we'll look at every piece of wasted button typing, you know, it took an extra click here, get rid of it, so that our average coach at Barbell Logic makes over $300 per hour. And at Turnkey Coach, we started licensing out that software after COVID and all the gyms closed down and you had personal trainers didn't have clients to train. We recognized that we had this great system of online coaching that could continue to build the relationship with their client, and the client could get charged less, had the flexibility to train anywhere they wanted, and the coach got paid exponentially more per hour because it only took them 3, 4, 5 minutes to break down a video. Mm-hmm. So now you don't just have 10 clients on your roster. We've got coaches that have 60 clients on their roster and are working. They're making $125,000 a year working 90 minutes a day. And that's, it sounds so ridiculous, John. It's like when I talk about it, it feels like I'm like, it's a multi-level marketing sales pitch scheme. It's,
I don't want to buy your Amway. I don't need any Amway.
Right.
I'm good.
But that is the middle of the bell curve. Right. Yeah. And for us, we try to take an attitude of abundance here where it's like, look, there are billions of people that need to get stronger. Billions. And if we can help connect other good coaches out there with their clients and let them give their keys back to the gym, that doesn't mean that we don't want people to ever in-person coach. I think that's, in-person coaching is still great. The software works great for that. But to have the freedom to go to Mexico with your family and break down videos for your clients for half an hour, you know, watching the sun come up, like that is an unbelievable life. And the client gets the same thing. Like they get to train if, you know, so I've got tons of executives. They coach me like, hey, coach, I'm going to be in, you know, Philadelphia this week at this hotel. As soon as they check in, before they even go to their room, they go to the little gym, and those hotel gyms suck. You know, they've got a bench and, you know, dumbbells up to 50s. They take a quick video of it and send me what they've got. And they wake up the next morning and there's programming with that equipment, with what they have access to the very next morning. And that is why this has continued to grow millions and millions and millions of dollars. Our churn is 3% or less per month. Like clients don't leave.
Yeah.
And so for us, what I'm trying to preach and promote is that I think there are a ton of really incredible in-person trainers and coaches out there that have a very high level of service. They always show up on time. They look the part. They dress the part. They train themselves. They've got a great personality. They welcome them with a smile and a handshake. But I don't think that same standard of coaching has been applied or accepted in the online coaching world yet. And that's what we're trying to change. Honestly, I'm trying to put traditional personal training out of business. That doesn't mean I'm trying to put in-person coaching out of business. It's just because we still like to do that some. We still do seminars and that kind of stuff. But ultimately, you can make so much more money doing a very high level of service of online coaching as a coach. And the client also has a tremendous benefit because they pay so much less and have the same flexibility. So that's really, I think, what set us apart in that online coaching world. We're not selling programs and never will.
Well, that's what we do. We sell programs. I sell teams. I mean, but the problem that we run into is there's like a high degree of execution that's required to do more advanced training. You know, if it's very basic and, we tend to get people not necessarily in that, I can't say we don't. I mean, the majority of our people are pretty well advanced. But we also set up a Discord and people post workout or post videos, and I do all that stuff and my coaches do that just as kind of a service. It's definitely an interesting model, and, I'd love to, I'll probably end up coming out and visiting you and just going through it because I feel like, I'm not a fan of, if somebody's ever going to pitch me, or more importantly, if I ever want to know something, I just get on a plane and go visit them. Let me take you through my Zoom presentation. I'm like, no, I want to fucking puke.
Yeah. Totally agree. And here's what I would say with first off, my door is always open. Got a great guest room. Would love for you to come stay. We've had a lot of our investors. It's interesting before they invested in our business, they asked to come stay in my home with us because they wanted to see the life that I live. Like, am I full of shit basically? And they get to see the way I interact with my wife and my kids. They get to see exactly how much time I'm spending online coaching every day. By the way, like the executives on my team, like I'm the CEO and I'm a legit CEO of a Delaware C Corp. That's a big, massive company at this point. I get up every morning and I do online coaching for about 40 minutes. And then I spend the rest of my day being a CEO.
Sure.
Most of my coaches have left their jobs as professionals. I just had a guy, one of my coaches, I'm actually going to interview him on the podcast. He was a vice president of a bank, left his job a few years ago, and all he does is online coaching. Wow. And the guy is making like way into the six figures. And I said, how much time are you spending a day online coaching? And he said between 75 and 100 minutes a day. And we're talking deep six figures at 75 to 100 minutes a day. And so it's not the exception to the rule. It's the norm. Now, here's what I would say with guys like what you're doing. I wouldn't stop doing if you have a successful business where you are selling group programming to athletes and you've built your name on, on Power Athlete. And before that, the CF football, which I don't know, so I mean, that's your MO, right? And so, but what I would say is like, that would be a great entry product for a lot of these kids, a lot of these college kids and high school kids who want to test the waters. You can still absolutely offer programming itself or programming only, or maybe you break down one video a week, but you have an easy buy up for these athletes who want to take it to the next level and go, okay, the buy up is, X amount more, and you get unlimited breakdowns. And then what it adds to your workflow is on average 15 minutes a week per kid. That's it. Right. So on average, when I break down every single exercise of every single client that I have, and each client takes about 1 hour per month of work for programming and video breakdown. And I know that we can charge way more because of the level of service that, right? So we can charge $300-$500 a month doing that, but that's still half the price that they're in Austin. Yeah. It's a third of the price of what they're going to pay. for personal training.
So, you know, even if you go over and let's say you were to go drop in and watch personal trainers, and I've done this because, you know, we've trained at commercial gyms, the level of expertise and the quality in which they're getting is fucking dog shit.
It's awful.
Yeah. I mean, it's just not good. And the reason being is not a lot of people are skilled at lifting barbells. So what they do is they just gravitate away from them. But the fastest way to drive adaptation is by either finding somewhere, you know, whether it be a barbell load or, you know, some of the density stuff we do that involves living, as you know, within strongman, heavy and awkward objects. But you still need a level of strength that's usually developed with the barbell to kind of progress into that type of stuff.
Absolutely.
But I mean, for the professional Brazilian jiu-jitsu guys, they come and they train with me 3 days a week. And everything is monitored, programmed, and worked through everything in real time, because that's the only way that I can actually get the result that I'm looking for.
Of course.
And one of the issues, and I think what you're doing is incredible for customer retention. So, I mean, you know, if you think about like, hey, okay, so you're following this program, you know, and we don't have a very high churn rate. I mean, the people that tend to follow our programs tend to enjoy them. But there's always this issue of like, hey, what's the workaround? You know, I have this issue. And it comes down to like, shoot a video, send it to me, and I'll tell you exactly how to fix this.
That's right.
So, I mean, that piece of being able to offer that like a level of expertise from somebody that knows, because I mean, here's the deal. You can go, and I'm sure you've run this too. You have an injury and you go see 10 guys and don't get the fucking result you're looking for. All of a sudden somebody says something or you go see one guy and the guy fucking changes everything.
That's right. Light bulb goes off and it fixes. Yep.
We did this weekend. Victor, who's Victor Hugo, is like the top ultra in the world. He has a big fight in Costa Mesa this week. So he was having some issues, you know, a little dysfunction, was missing hip extension and some of the things that I can't necessarily fix in the gym. So we jumped on a plane, flew to Salt Lake City to see Craig Bueller, who does the activated muscle integration technique, who I've worked with for years. And within an hour of Bueller working on him, fixed every piece of that I brought him. I said, hey, he, you know, this is what I'm seeing in the training. These are things that I can't fix. I need you to fix them. Got him balanced, did everything, went to the gym. Everything was fine and got back on the plane. But you know, that's for one person, but being able to offer that for, you know, thousands of people around the globe where now they have it is incredible.
Well, and so here's the thing, what I see with as little as I know about your business is that you can offer the programming at scale, just like you're doing now at whatever price point you're doing now. I still think that our software is way, way, way faster and more efficient for just programming only. And we do sell a programming, by the way, just so it's, if people want to check it out, it's turnkey.coach. It's $3 a client, right? For programming only. If you want all the bells and whistles, it's $5 a client, right? And we only charge by the client. So most of the other, almost all of the other softwares, they charge you like zero clients to 15 is this much. And then, you know, we don't do that. If you got six clients on your roster, you pay for six clients. Your first month's always free. There's never contracts, all that stuff. That all sounds like a advertising bullshit. So I won't go there, but here's what I would say here. What I think you are potentially missing, if you'll allow me to humbly say this, is that you're offering an excellent entry-level product of programming. You also offer an unbelievable executive package where if you're going to get on an airplane and go work with somebody, you can charge whatever you want for that. What you need is something in the middle. You need, okay, what do I do with, you know, these athletes that need something beyond the entry level product, but certainly can't pay to have John Welborn get on an airplane and come work with me. Right. And so that's where I think our model of online coaching really comes in and does well. And so, you know, I think a lot of coaches now, the other thing you have, obviously, and you've done a tremendous job, you've got a great name and a great brand recognition. Everybody knows your brand. Everybody knows your name. But everybody else that's listening to this podcast, they don't have that. And so what they have to do is separate themselves from a service level and create service that is far beyond what anybody else is providing. And that's, again, Barbell Logic, we've got a pretty good following, a pretty good name. But I have really tried, and I think you do this as well too, just because you've been a professional athlete. But what we do is not based on the cult of personality of Matt Reynolds or Nikki Sims or anybody else. Like, like that's how you drive up the value of your business. It's not about cult of personality. It's about the quality of the service provided. And so if you have a high quality entry level service, an incredibly high quality medium tier service, and the executive package, oh, if you've got an issue, we're hopping on an airplane and actually going to come see you in person at this price point, you would kill it, like kill it. And then my goal as the software owner is to make sure that in every one of those interactions, we cut out as much waste as possible so that your dollar per hour continues to go up while the satisfaction level and the service level also goes up for the client. We never reduce service for efficiency for the coach at any point. And this is a core value for us. If we say, well, we could just, what if we only broke down, you know, one exercise per workout or whatever. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that for other coaching businesses, but for us, we're never going to reduce service for the client. We're mm-hmm. only going to improve service. Right. So
no, I mean, that's
how you separate yourself.
Well, I mean, it's kind of a, like the best worst case scenario. I mean, obviously not everybody's going to be able to show up and train. I mean, it's just part of the deal. I mean, people have, and then on top of it too, you know, now all of a sudden, I mean, and what's kind of ironic is, I got headhunted to work for, to almost do exactly what you're talking about by a pretty rich individual here in Austin. So he hit me up and said, hey, you know, however we got connected, can you come and, you know, and work with me 2 days a week? And I showed him that I want to do a price. And he said, what's that times 12? Or what's that a month? Times that by 12. And then basically wrote me a check and handed it to me. And I was like, shit.
For the year. Yeah.
Yeah. And those are the type of people.
So there's your executive package.
Yeah. Right. And so I go 2 days a week and he has, you know, a private gym and go and work with him. And yep. It's actually been extremely rewarding for me because, you know, I get to spend a couple hours a week with a self-made billionaire.
Yeah.
And cool. Yeah, I mean, what I couldn't learn from that has been, you know, I'm an idiot. So
how many coaches do you have that are also working at Power Athlete?
Contractors, you mean?
Yeah. Contractors that are doing some form of work, for you guys or with you guys, like yes, contractors, most of our.
Yeah. So we've certified like 150 coaches. And so
they are charging and using Power Athlete in the programming or like, what does that look like? What is their contracting?
So like we'll bring them on not only for seminars and different things, but for the most part, I have never really cracked into what you're looking to do, like what you're talking about in terms of this. And actually this part of the business was something that we've modeled and looked at. And the problem was we're never able to really crack the code. And so when, you reached out, I like had it earmarked and I was like, man, I got to connect. I got to learn more about this because one, this is a piece, you know, you're looking at Zoom, you're looking at phones, text messages and this, and we've done a ton of testing. With this exact thing. And it's always come down to the hurdles of technology are far, like you're basically the tech stack becomes almost too laborious.
That's exactly right.
And so what you've done in terms of, and I'm sure you did the exact same thing. You're like, okay, I got a phone. Do I text? Is it iMessage? Is it Zoom? You know, how do I do quality control? You know, going through and dealing with coaches and being like, here's the deal, dude. You got to wear pants. Like, I mean, just even down to the basic things, like don't say anything inappropriate. So,
that's exactly right.
We went through
right.
this.
I don't want dirty laundry in the background, yes. right? Like it's that kind of stuff. It's pure professionalism.
Yeah. So that's been, you know, we have a staff of individuals to do it. We have a massive pool of people that are looking for, or basically we have a massive pool of people that don't even know that this like aspect is available.
Yep.
So as we tested, and we spent well over a year testing this, it just came down. I mean, you're talking about ActiveCampaign, you're talking about Calendly, you're talking about Zoom, you're talking about this. I mean, it was a logistical tech stack nightmare trying to do this to the point where I actually put the project on hold. And I was like, I'll come back to this when I feel like I can find a technology piece that actually makes sense.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
So when you reached out, it was you shot me that like an email, and I had it saved, and I was like, I got to connect back to this. I had some other things happen in my family here that like kind of killed me at the end of the year. But you know, that's when I reached out, and I was like, man, this is an interesting piece, and what you guys have done in terms of creating technology. Because here's the deal: I'm sure as you've done market analysis and looked at all the different competitors in this space. And, you know, in terms of online programming, program delivery, and what you're doing, nothing is ever 100%. And no. Then you get into this and you're like, okay, this is what it looks like in my dream state. Now I got to find somebody to build this. And now I'm dealing and I'm, you know, leveraging contractors and bringing this in. And, you know, we've gone down the road, you know, went down the road many times to look into like our own technology and our own app and this, and it just yep. always looks like a absolute clusterfuck. I did a, call the other day with a friend who does online training, built the app. I mean, they are, you know, 95% way, and all of a sudden they get hit with a massive $200,000 bill and the people are holding hostage and now it's an arbitration. I mean, it's like, I listened to this and the technology piece and crossing that hurdle and getting it done. And then, you know, now you have iterations and you have this version and fixing
this.
It's never done. It's always in this constant state of death.
There's always a feature roadmap that always, and because technology is advancing, and that's, and we held off a long time as well. Like, so, you know, some of the third party programming software that, again, everybody that's listening knows of the big ones. And the first reason we started to make our own and we knew that it was going to be a big jump was because it didn't, what we were using didn't automate, it didn't automatically track metrics. We want every metric tracked. And I'm not talking about like one rep max on, you know, the big lifts. I mean, I'm talking about chin up PRs. I'm talking about, you know, barbell curls, PRs, three sets of eight, three sets. That doesn't matter, right? Weight, waist, alcohol drinks per day. All, you know, we do nutrition. We do all the kind of, so it, and it auto tracks all of that stuff. Nothing has to be manually entered in. So that's the first reason we built it for us. And by the way, it was never meant to go to market. Like what we're talking about right now was all only supposed to be for us.
Sure.
And then once we got that automated metric piece put in, then you really got to see this, my product manager and his background in lean manufacturing come out and go, you know what? I can really start focusing on waste, reducing waste now so that the efficiency of this goes up. So here's what that looked like. We focused, because it was never supposed to go to market, we focused on UX, on user experience, so that it worked really well first before we focused on UI, which is, for lack of a better term, prettiness, how pretty it is.
Sure.
Most softwares do the opposite. So that stuff in the app store, they want it to look pretty so that somebody buys it, but then churn is incredibly high because the UX sucks. For us, we started with the UX. It works unbelievably well. And now for the past 6 months or so, we've been able to really start focusing on UI so that it also looks beautiful. It's white labeled. So like if you had this software, it's not like turnkey coach software by Barbell Logic Online Coaching. It's Power Athlete. It's white labeled. It looks like yours. It's
which is classy. You know, because you know, at the end of the day, you know, to really establish and build a brand, I mean, you need to be front and center. And
that's it. That's exactly right.
Yeah, and there's kind of a growing up phase, I think.
Man, it's been awesome, and it's been great because the online coaching business, Barbell Logic Online Coaching, the B2C business, has been very profitable over the years, and it was able to build the software. And so rather than having to go to investors and say like, hey, I need it. So we've spent about $2 million on the software. We were able to use the profit from the B2C business to build out the software for us to use, and then recognize that this is a real asset that other great coaches out there need with Turnkey Coach. And so, and it's called that because it's turnkey. Like the point is,
so not just a fancy name.
Yeah. And it's, again, it's white labeled. You can change the colors. You can, you know, put your logo on it, all that kind of stuff. But the idea there is we handle, like, it's payment processing. We handle the payment processing through the software, but you get all the money. Like the money doesn't go to our account and then we hold it for a few days. And then, but like, it's just like you use in Venmo or Cash App or PayPal. Yes. You know, right?
So, you effectively you own the credit card. So now these are your clients.
They're your clients.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. I just want to make sure, right? They're not Barbell Logic clients. They're your clients. And so then you just get charged based on how many clients you have at the end of the month, you know, on your roster. It's that simple. If a client bounces a credit card, even though they're your clients, we will actually reach out to try to get it to go through. Because we've got great systems and standard operating procedures. Most coaches want to coach. Most coaches don't want to do the admin behind running the business. They don't want to have to go that, you know, sending that awkward email of, you know, why did the credit card balance? Was it insufficient funds? Did it expire? Was there a security issue? Like, we handle all of those things. It's turnkey so that the coach can do what they do best, which is coach. And so it gives them their life back. And so again, that could be a coach that's got a gym, or, you know, and you're at the gym 50, 60 hours a week, and the only way to scale is to go to 70 hours a week. Like, nobody wants to do that. You could continue to own the gym, give your clients 24-hour key access, hold coaching hours, you know, 2 hours a day, 3 hours a day. And then if your clients come during the time that you're not there coaching, they just have the online coaching package added, and they can video their lifts, and you can break them down within 24 hours, and it takes you 5 minutes to break down the workout. So it works awesome. So here's the last thing I'll say, and then, because I gotta call with a TV show we're going to be on. I always try to send people to a place where they can experience things for free. I'm not trying to, as much as this has sort of sounded like, my sales pitch is I want to raise the standard of online coaching. It's not a sales pitch for Turnkey Coach. Of course, we would like to have as many great coaches on Turnkey Coach as possible. But because of that, we've put out a massive amount of content. We're not a content company, but we put out a massive amount of highly produced content. You can go to turnkey.coach, and there is a very short course that you can take called Coaching Rediscovered that is 100% free. We don't collect your email address. We're not going to spam you. Like, we decided no friction for coaches that just want to see, okay, I've never really thought about, how do I take the same, if you're somebody that takes a ton of pride in your in-person coaching and have an incredible standard in that, to start to have a paradigm shift to create that same standard for online coaching, that's what that course is. It's just like 8 videos or maybe 6-7 minutes long, and there's some additional documents that go with it. There's no homework. It's 100% free. And so I would tell your listeners, just go there and play around and watch those videos and learn. My podcast, Barbell Logic, on the Friday episodes, I've been doing for all this past year what we call the Coaching Success Series, and I literally just give away everything I know about business and have learned about business on those Friday podcasts. And you don't even have to be in the fitness industry. I mean, I had a guy who's a butcher in Indiana. He's like, I love those podcasts because I've learned so much about business. And so I would tell your listeners, just do some research on the content side and see if that's something that might fit. And if so, you can schedule a demo call. There's never a hard sell at all. You know, we want to have that attitude of abundance, and always happy. You guys can reach out. Anybody can reach out to me. I will always respond to emails within 24 hours. It'll actually be me. It won't be my executive assistant. And we're happy to help. And so, but the big deal is, man, there are hundreds of millions, if not billions, of people that need to be strong and healthy. Oh. And we want to give access to the best coaches in the world to be able to do that. And so that we're playing on the same team here, rather than fighting over this percentage of the pie, let's grow the whole pie.
Yeah.
That's the goal.
You know, we built Power Athlete on this platform of strength. And
that's right.
You know, we've always talked about, you know, strength is a platform of which life is built. So if you're stronger, you know, and I'm not going to, you know, rip off Mark Ripto, you know, the stronger people, harder to kill. But I mean, for the most part, everything seems to be easier when you are stronger.
That's right.
I mean, it's a natural deal. And when I've seen people get the gifts of strength, not only do they become much better versions of themselves, but they become much happier people.
Oh,
I don't think
it's amazing.
Living in weakness is the most emasculating thing that you can do. And
that's
when
right.
you empower somebody through lifting weights and being strong in this, like, you just see it, like, permeates through them. And I think, you know, Rob Wolf paid me a nice compliment where he said, you know, I didn't realize that athleticism and what you guys were doing was really the secret of longevity, because the people that are continuing to train and be able to move and do a lot of the things that you guys put out, they tend to be dramatically better than those that don't. Yeah. I'm like, well, I mean, it's the ultimate trump card. It's a pretty girl.
Then amazing, you know, Peter Attia comes out with Outlive and literally says all the stuff that we've been doing for 20 years.
Yeah.
On longevity.
Yeah, that's a whole other story.
Get it. But the goal there, where he's, I agree that there's some stuff that he says that I don't necessarily agree with, but his focus on what strength training does for people for longevity
is really, really key.
I mean, and when you combine it with some intelligent conditioning, they are synergistic, right? Yeah. And it's, I mean, it's an 8x reduction in all cause mortality. Yeah. What else do you need to know, right?
Well, every, let's say, adult male that's, you know, listening to this podcast or really just within our earshot is going to die of one of two things. It's either going to be a heart attack or some form of cancer. You can pretty much get rid of the heart attack deal with, you know, you put a barrel sauna in your backyard and get in 70 minutes a day from the Finland studies. That goes pretty much to zero. Now, all of a sudden, the greatest form in fighting cancer is exercise. You know, Tom Enkledon has a ton of research that talks about, you know, strength training and this. I mean, developing killer cells. I mean, it's really your greatest ally in fighting off cancer.
You may still get cancer. But the chances of you beating cancer, right? It also is going to reduce the chance that you get cancer.
And we get back to this libertarian thing where it's like, you know, like where are you sourcing your food? What does your diet look like? Are you getting testing done so that you can identify environmental toxins that you might not even know you're exposed to? Yep. Which, you know, when you talk to Tom, he's like, you know, I have a lot of healthy people, young people that are getting cancer because of what's in the environment. But the problem is we know what, if it's there, we can mitigate it. We can deal with it. But if you don't do the testing. So I think there's a roadmap for it. But dude, I know you got to bounce. Amazing conversation, dude.
Huge honor to have you. I'd love to have you on mine soon as well and talk business. We'll follow up after. I'd love to let's find a time to hang out together and just do some business brainstorming just for fun. I think it'd be a blast.
Yeah, no, so. Phil, who does our merch, is actually in Kansas. So as you said, Southern Missouri, I'm like, ooh, that's my old stomping ground.
That's really close. But also in the wintertime, I certainly don't mind coming to Austin. I travel all the time as well for business. Awesome. So now we'll do it. Thanks, John. Appreciate you, man.
Thank you.
See you, buddy.
See you. Thanks for tuning in another episode of Power Athlete Radio. Bye. Hey there, Power Athlete Nation. Big shout out to all the heavy hitters who stuck around till the final whistle. If you've been soaking in the knowledge bombs and epic tales we've been dropping for free, here's your chance to be a game changer. Swing by klfi.com/powerathlete and toss a few bucks our way to keep the podcast fueled and firing on all cylinders. That's ko-fi.com/powerathlete. Your support makes a difference. See ya.